Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 19 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action movie Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is Alex Robinson of the Star Wars Minute, the Godfather Minute, and one of the people who, you know, got me interested in doing this type of show myself. So thank you once again, Alex, even though I thank you in, you know, every inaugural episode of each season. So thanks to you and Pete for, you know, letting crazy people like us know that there are other crazy people out there who can do things like that. So welcome to the show, Alex.
Oh, thanks. I'm happy to be here and to continue my romp through the only 3 minutes so far now of Die Hard that I've seen.
Well, you got another action-packed scene coming up here today, so... You know, we got another minute for to maybe try to convince you that you might want to learn more about Die Hard. Besides just going to the
slowly grow, it's growing on me.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Because we're done with the family matters, and now we're dealing with, you know, a little bit more action.
Family matters.
I know. I didn't even do that on purpose.
Did you do that?
Nope. I did not. I'm going to tell the story a lot of times throughout this podcast, but I actually was at a taping of Family Matters in the summer of 1989, and I was there with a group of friends, and we started screaming to Reginald Bell Johnson, "What's in those Twinkies?" And he started laughing, and he actually rattled off the lines. You know, wow. So it was a lot of fun. I'm sure he has no recollection of that. You know, a group of teenagers, you know, who were just screaming. It probably happens to him all the time, you know, but back then, you know,
it was probably still pretty fresh back then.
It was very fresh. Yeah, it was very fresh. Yeah. That was the summer this movie was on HBO. I was on a trip with a bunch of friends, all along the West Coast, and, you know, every motel that we stayed in, you know, usually the motels back then had free HBO, and, you know, August 1989 was when Die Hard debuted on HBO, and we would watch it every time it was on. You know, so that's why I saw it so many times. And then we got to see Reginald Bell Johnson in the flesh. You know,
and you got to interrupt the recording of a show.
No, it was
like constantly yelling when they
were. It wasn't in the middle of the show, but it was when he was standing on the side. But we were able to crack him up. You know, that's the important thing. So yeah. Minute 19. Begins with the driver acknowledging Theo's message and ends with Theo typing away ferociously. So, mm-hmm. So yes.
Hack in the main.
Yeah, right? Definitely. So yesterday's episode ended with Theo and Carl disposing of the John Larroquette doppelganger, which, you know, this is probably one of the last times I'll be able to actually say that, you know, because we're not going to see him again. Probably not. And Theo runs over to the computers and starts working on it. He tells the driver that you know, we're in, and the driver, who's Heinrich, acknowledges Theo's message in a very silent way, and we get to see that he's still like chewing his gum. which to me says so much about the fact that here we have these bad guys that this is second nature to them. You know, they're not nervous. Mm. They're not, you know, all of us, when we go somewhere that we don't necessarily know what's going to happen or anything like that, we might be a little bit of little nervous or whatever. Here, he's calm, cool, sitting in the truck, chewing his gum, you know, not a care in the world, you know. So who knows? And then we get to see the truck begin to back up. Finally, it's backing up because, you know, the guard no longer will be able to see that the truck is sitting in the middle of the parking lot. They're actually able to back it up. And then we see Theo again with a shot of him where he, you know, looks up and pushes up his glasses. You know, he's had a little too much excitement that his glasses started, you know, sliding down his nose or something like that. And
he should probably get those adjusted.
Yeah, probably. Probably. Or maybe that's his signature move. You know.
He's famous for that.
That's right. He's famous for pushing up his glasses. You know. And then, you know, we get a shot of him by the computers. And he flips on the monitor. Which, you know, I always find it really funny. These old monitors, you know, from the 80s with the green screens, you know, where you just flip the switch and you either had the green or the orange screen, the green screens or the orange screens. You probably yeah. also remember those, you know, where.
Yeah, I guess I mostly remember the green ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess you're right. There was like a kind of orange tinted
yeah.
one also.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know what the technical reason was that they did it back then that way, but you know, it was very different than what it is today.
yeah, I was just looking up when you brought the gum. Did you have more you were saying about
nope.
the gum, or is that
nope.
the? Was that
I wasn't
the,
gonna say anything about the gum.
Well, I was gonna say I was speculating that it might be Nicorette, a caffeine gum. So maybe that he's trying to quit smoking and that's why he's chewing the gum. I looked it up. Nicorette was introduced in the United States 1984. So,
oh wow! Okay, that's a very interesting. I thought you were going to say that. I thought you were going to say you looked up and you know chewing gum could theoretically be a you know a way to calm someone's nerves or something like that. You know, I thought that's maybe what you were going to say.
Well, yeah, I guess.
But Nicorette might be doing the same thing.
That it was the, yeah, because it's you know he's jonesing and he's like, well, okay.
No, but isn't Nicorette to try to keep you from smoking?
Yeah, so normally he'd be like, oh man, I'm so nervous, I need to smoke, and then he's like, okay, I'll take the Nicorette instead. Anyways,
yeah, no, that I like it. I like it. I'm game on that. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And you know, then he sits down at the console and just begins to hum as he starts typing away frantically. You know,
that's what a weirdo he is—a crazy guy. He gets to hum and make goofy noises as he's typing into the computer.
Yeah. And you know, later this minute he's going to get even goofier with what he does.
Mm-hmm.
But and then we get a shot of Carl in the lobby, and he starts moving swiftly towards the elevator banks, because we saw 2 weeks last week. We saw last week that John went towards the elevators. So, you know, we know about that. Mm-hmm. The one thing I noticed here is that there's on the side of the building, we see that there are, I guess the elevators are numbered, because you have, it says 2 through 16 and 17 through 27. So apparently you can get on different elevators, you know, the elevator banks that go to different areas in the building.
Sure. Yeah. Different floors. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you missed this part, but the guard said to John when he got there, take the express elevator and get off when you hear the noise at 30. And so, you know, we had a question about, okay, how do you choose on an express elevator where to get off? The idea of an express mm-hmm. elevator is it takes you to a specific place. So why would it make sense?
Well, and also, why does he say get the noise? What does he
get
say
off,
when you hear a noise? Get off.
Get off when you hear the noise. Meaning everyone's at the party. You're going to hear the noise of the party, and at that point, get off the elevator. But, you know, if you're on an express elevator, you don't get to choose where it stops.
Well, and he tells him what floor, right?
Yes.
So why would he have to listen for noise? Like, he says, take the elevator to 30 and get off when you hear noise? Like, what?
Yeah. No, he says, take the express elevator and get off where you hear noise. He doesn't say take to the 30th floor. He says they're on the 30th floor, and then he says they're the only ones in the building, so take the express elevator and get off when you hear the noise.
Right, but if he knows what floor they're on, why does he have to get off when he hears the noise? It's
I agree with you. We discussed
yeah,
this.
Weird.
We discussed
I'm,
this.
I'm glad John Larroquette got murdered in that scene. He's a terrible doorman.
Apparently. Yeah. And then Carl runs across, he's like running swiftly across the lobby, and as he's running, he pulls off his jacket.
Yeah, know,
which is very strange.
I did not like that.
No, no.
Why did he bring his jacket if he was just going to take it off in the lobby? Just leave it in the car, dude.
It's winter, it's cold. I'm kidding, I'm kidding. I know it's LA. I know it's LA. It's not cold
right,
at all.
But it's like, even if he was in Minneapolis, it's like 30 feet to the door. From the guy parked his car literally right outside the door of the place.
Yeah, but so, the question is when you're in the car, are you wearing your jacket or not? You know, if he's already wearing a jacket, so it takes time to take off the jacket and leave it in the car.
So, you have it, so instead he's going to leave his jacket behind? That seems like a, that seems
he
like
might,
a, like.
Maybe he needs it later.
He doesn't want it anymore. Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's someone else's jacket. He's setting them up to be framed. He's like, oh, sir, we found your jacket here. I've never been to LA in my life. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's weird.
So they're gonna check fingerprints. They can check fingerprints on the jacket later if they find it outside
yeah.
the car. you know, that could be part of it also. So like, and then he like, first of all, I find it funny that he's, you know, running swiftly, you know, through the, or I don't even know if running is the right word, but he's moving quite quickly through the lobby. Again, yeah. He's going towards the other guard, but he's still making noise. You know, he's not doing it stealthily. You know, sure. if you want to go quietly, then you walk in smaller steps. You know, you're not going to be running and potentially, you know, clumping your shoes along the way. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure about that one. That's
well, maybe it's like, it's kind of like that dilemma when you're in the rain, you run. Like, if he runs, there's less time for the guard to react.
Right. Yeah, but in a second, we're going to see that the guard...
less chance of making noise, so it's kind of a right. trade-off, I guess.
Yeah, but we find out that this guard is even more clueless than John Larroquette was.
To be fair, it's Christmas Eve. I'm sure they weren't expecting a terrorist attack on Christmas Eve. Who is?
Well, because they didn't know that there was such a thing as Die Hard beforehand.
Yeah, that's true. This is what...
Now, if it had been, you know, more recently, they'd say, oh, I've seen Die Hard. I know what happens on Christmas Eve. But
yeah. Nowadays, every office, they say, put your best man. It's the Die Hard rule. Put your best man on guard duty on Christmas Eve. That's the lesson from all this.
That's great.
Why Christmas Eve? And why not Christmas, I wonder? You think no one would be in the building then?
Because they wanted to get people to be there for the party.
The hostages.
You don't know the plot, so you don't know why they need. They do need people to be in the building.
Got it.
That's
okay.
That's an integral part of.
Maybe the, I will the plot. Watch it after all.
All right. We got another day to keep working on this. We got to keep. We're getting there. Keep the momentum going. Keep the momentum going. Keep you asking questions. You know, I'm waiting for the time when you're going to write to me and say, you know what? I couldn't sleep last night because I was thinking all about Die Hard. So I just had to sit down and watch it. That's what I'm waiting for.
Okay. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. And I mean, he also handles his gun really, really strangely. He's holding it in his left hand, you know, backwards. It's in like a very strange way. And then he transfers it to his right hand as he's, you know, as he's making this jog across the lobby.
Yeah, holding a gun in your left hand backwards is like a bad idea.
He's a professional.
I'm no marksman, but that sounds like a crazy idea.
Yes, completely. Well, again, he knows that the other guard isn't paying attention, so it doesn't really make a difference.
Or if there's someone sneaking up behind you, that's how you shoot them, is by shooting them by holding the gun backwards.
Yeah. Right, he's concerned that John Larroquette's going to wake up and the zombie is going to come after him. There you go.
I like it.
That's a possibility. And and then the camera pans away from him quickly, and we get to see the second guard, you know, who's just around the corner, and he's not really paying much attention. And then he looks down and sees something rolling on the ground towards him, which looks like a hockey puck. That's right, it's a hockey puck.
Should have had Pete on for this.
It's not really a hockey puck. Mm-hmm. They should have. Okay. Hey, I'll record with Pete as long as we don't talk about, Tom Petty. We're good.
Too late. That ship has sailed. Heartbreaking.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And so this hockey puck comes down and rolls. They focus really well on it. It's a great shot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, having not seen this, I know you told me to stop asking these things, but what did you think was going to happen with this hockey puck?
I assumed it was.
Did you think it was going to explode?
I assumed it was some kind of bomb or something like that. I couldn't imagine a scene in which a person would just throw a hockey puck on the floor.
No, but maybe it's just a distraction.
Yeah. No, I guess I thought it would be some kind of explosion or something like that.
Right. Okay. Now I have no idea what this ordinance is. You know, like what they actually use for this type of thing. I tried looking it up and. I don't know what it's called. I think it's called like a. I thought it was called like a flash bomb or
That's
something
what I
like that.
It was,
and
yeah.
I couldn't find something like. Yeah, and I looked up flash bomb and I got some sort of like missiles, something like that, and I was like, okay, that's probably not what it is. So it rolls to a stop, and then as it falls, there's this huge flash. That comes and it fills the entire room, and which blinds the guard. And then Carl goes in for the kill and shoots him, three times in the chest.
Mm-hmm. Dead.
Now, Wouldn't you think that Carl would also get blinded by this? Because it's not like he's wearing goggles or he's looking away.
Just shutting your eyes, not is that not enough of a thing?
Well, we don't see him shut his eyes. He seems to be looking at him. So I don't know. I mean, he is coming from the side, so maybe he was able to, shield his eyes for the fraction of a second that the explosion goes off. I don't know.
Maybe he has special contact lenses.
Ah, maybe he works. Maybe Q gave him something to, to shield his
Is he
eyes.
possibly blind already?
Probably not, because he's a pretty good shot.
Yeah. Well, to keep our
But
eye,
then
we'll just
again,
see what
maybe he's
happens.
just amazing. Maybe he's got great hearing.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I
He's daredeviling it.
Yeah, and so the guard falls back backwards. And then that scene ends, and we get to see the garage once again. We get the parking lot. We see the truck
It's
continuing to back
very,
up.
sorry, I went around. It's very sad that now, like, these two families are gonna have on Christmas Eve is forever going to be associated with. That's when Dad got killed on Christmas Eve. He was working as a security guard. You know what I mean? It's kind
That's
of
true. That's very true.
sad.
Very
Anyway,
sad.
go ahead.
But they're both stuntmen, so it's okay.
Some have
They're
families
not
too.
actors. No, but they're like, oh, that's Dad's job. He always
Yeah,
gets shot.
he knew the risks.
That's right. You never know. And so then we get the shot of the truck again in the parking garage, and it's backing up, and we see the ramp come down from the back, and then the back of the truck opens up, and we see a group of men come out.
Dun
So
dun
immediately.
dun.
Exactly. Immediately, you can count about six of them. We right now won't go into each and every one of them what their names are. We'll get to that a little later. And then, we see Alan Rickman, Hans Gruber, come out from the middle of them, and everyone looks to him and follows him down. And the camera does a great job of following him. We see the whole group walking down the corridor. Everyone's around. He's got groupies. That's what it looks like.
It's very good villain reveal.
These are
Very good
the
villain reveal.
Hans Gruber groupies.
Groom heads. Hans
Yeah.
heads.
There you go. And they continue down the corridor. They make a right, and they
Hans
continue down
Bonds.
that corridor. If you if you count the number of people in this scene, so you get there are 10 people here plus the two that are upstairs, which comes out to an even dozen, even though there are actually 13 terrorists in this movie. If you count them later on, which you won't do, but well, you will when you wake up in the middle of the night dying to know what happens in Die Hard. But besides that, there are 13. And I've always found that really funny, because I remember as a teenager, I had the poster on my wall, and it says 12 terrorists take over, the Nakatomi building on Christmas Eve or something like that. And I said to myself, even on the poster, they get it wrong. Because if if you look at the cast, or if you count them in the movie, there are 13.
Yeah,
So
why do you think that is?
I don't know. They don't know how to count. Maybe it's easier to just say 12 plus one. Maybe it's
The third,
12 henchmen. You have Hans plus 12 henchmen.
like a baker's dozen.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, but it didn't say Baker's dozen on the poster. That I know.
That would just confuse people.
Yeah. Well, most people don't even know. If you tell them it's a dozen, they're going to say, huh?
Dozen what?
How many? Exactly. A dozen donuts? Okay. And then we're back at a shot of Theo typing away furiously on the keyboard. And I love how he's typing really fast, and you see this pen just sitting on the top of the keyboard. Above the F keys, the function keys. And it's just really funny that pen is just not moving. Someone left it there, because I doubt that Theo took out a pen and just put it there, because it probably would have taken the cap off if it was his.
You think that's John Larroquette's pen?
That's very possible.
I would assume.
That would actually might be worth some money.
Still alive, John Larroquette?
Yes, and they're having a reboot of Night Court, where he's going to be on it.
Really?
I don't know what they're going to do because they're all the rest are dead. You know, Harry Anderson died. Marky Post just died like a year or two ago.
Mac.
Mac died. Selma.
Bull is still alive.
You know, Bull is still alive, yes.
Yeah, so yeah. Hopefully he'll come back as well.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. I think it's just a way to showcase Dan Fielding. I think that's what it is. You know, I actually used to love that show. I thought that Harry Anderson was hilarious as the
good show.
You know, actually, so was John Larroquette.
Yeah,
he was also great there.
He won armful of Oscars, not Oscars, but
Emmys. I think he won like three Emmys in a row for that role.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Which is great. So when you see the pen, you see that not only does Theo have this really expensive ring on, but he also has what looks like a very expensive watch. You know, but again, you can't figure out what type of watch it is just by looking at it. So it's just, you know, I think it's supposed to say that he's more of a highbrow, you know, terrorist.
Yeah, who wears a fancy watch to a heist?
A heist.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, or a job. That would be like a Mac, Apple Watch, where he'd be like making calculations and tweeting and everything.
Yeah.
So.
Right, and that's how this minute ends.
Yeah.
So, anything else you want to say before we get into the script? Because there isn't much in the script.
No, I just like the reveal of the. Did you know Alan Rickman when you saw the movie for the first time, or was this kind of his big breakthrough?
No, this was his debut. He was in the theater before.
Oh, okay.
They actually, he was seen in, what's that movie with John Malkovich?
Being John Malkovich.
With Michelle Pfeiffer and, no, with Michelle Pfeiffer and Glenn Close.
Les Liaisons Dangereuses?
Something like that, yeah, exactly. So, Dangerous Liaison. So he was in the stage version of it, and they saw him there and decided to cast him in this movie based on that.
Like, well, I'll slum it and do this. No one will ever see it.
Yeah, I'll go back to the theater afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's but I think that's also part of the beauty of it. You know, the fact that they were able to take this actor that pretty much nobody knew who he was and make him such a forceful villain. I mean, again, you don't really know that, but
well, I know he's.
You just know that by hearsay.
Yeah, I know it was an iconic thing. Yeah. So.
Yes, I mean, you actually don't even get any dialogue from him. Not today, and not tomorrow either. So, you know. So the script just has one little small paragraph about this minute, where it says on the screen the driver nods at the security camera, as several men climb out of the rear of the van and begin unloading wooden crates by the service elevator. So, you know, they don't do that in the movie.
Yeah.
They're not unloading everything. They take everything on their own. You do see in the background when Hans is walking down the corridor, you do see two of them, you know, pushing something. We'll know later in the movie what it is. You know, some contraption they are pushing on the way. And then part of what's written here in the script at this point is a scene that happens later on where he makes a phone call. But where John makes a phone call. So theoretically, if this went according to the script, you'd get another short scene with John. But sorry, just not doesn't work time. That way. Nope, not this time around. Sorry, Alex.
Yeah, maybe I should watch the rest of the movie just so I get my fix, my John McClane fix.
Sure. All right. I think I think it's a great idea. I'm all for it. You know, I would come over and watch it with you, but it's across the world, so it's a little difficult. We can watch, you know, at the same time online if you want to, you know,
and text each other.
So
I'm up to the part where he goes into the elevator.
They're bickering again. more family squabbling. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a little story about an adventure or misadventure of something that happened to them around the holidays at some point in their life. So, Alex, you have another story that doesn't involve, colorful poop?
well, I'll tell the story.
Just, I'm looking for diversity. I'm not saying I didn't like the story. I love the story. I'm just looking for diversity. I don't want everyone to say, "Oh, Alex was on your show and all he talked about was colored
back
poop."
When I lived in New York City, my wife's mother, my mother-in-law, loved hosting to watch the Thanksgiving Day parade. She would get a hotel room that overlooked the parade route, the famous Macy's Day Parade, and we would go there on Thanksgiving morning and watch the parade go by. And this was when the character Barney, is Barney still a thing? Do kids still know who Barney is?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, anyway,
I don't think so.
Barney was like a giant purple stuffed dinosaur that was very popular in the 90s, maybe?
Yeah, the 90s.
It was early aughts, maybe? And there was a balloon of Barney, but then while the parade was going by, we were watching all these balloons, and then there's a problem. The Barney one stops, and then the whole Barney balloon, like, just deflated, right? And it was such a delight watching, because everyone hated Barney, and so it was very fun watching his balloon deflate and watch him all get sort of, you know, it was like the Wicked Witch disappearing as it slowly got lower and lower, and you know, one of my fondest Thanksgiving memories was watch Barney die a slow death on Broadway. So, yeah, that was it. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Sounds like something that would happen in like a Friends episode or something like that.
Possibly, you know. Yeah.
Didn't that happen with Snoopy? I think it happened with Snoopy. On,
did that happen on Friends?
That someone deflated Snoopy at one point. And during the Macy's Day Parade.
Yeah, well, there was a famous incident where it was very windy and a Dr. Seuss balloon slammed into a lamppost, and then that lamppost fell over and killed somebody. So after that, they started managing the balloons a lot tighter because, you know, they didn't want that to happen again. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, be careful. I think that would probably be a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so on that lovely note.
Hey, at least it didn't have multicolored poop in it.
That's true. That's true. Just Dr. Seuss. You know, we can talk about Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss
and Barney.
Someone. Yeah.
There you go. There's a plot for a Die Hard type movie, you know, where Barney and Dr. Seuss take over, the Macy's department store. There you go.
I like it, dude. I like the corporate promotional synergy of having Dr. Seuss and Barney in it. So,
yeah. Well, of course, we talked about both of them, so why not? Mm-hmm. All right, great. You want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
I'm on the Twitter at @arobtwit, @arobtwit, if you are into Twitter. I'm also over at Instagram at @arobtwit, @arobtwit. And over on my Instagram, I post my artwork all the time. Over at Twitter, I mostly post depressing things about the end of the world. So between those two things, I'm sure there's something for you to enjoy. @arobtwit on Twitter and Instagram.
Excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, or you can go to my website, which is movierobminute.com. So Alex, you feel like coming back again tomorrow for one last minute to finish off this week?
I think I can do it.
All right.
I think excellent. I got it.
All right. I'm very happy to hear that. So we will see you tomorrow. And until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.